Picture this. It's 2 in the morning. A magnitude 6.8 earthquake has just hit your city. Cell towers are down. Internet is out. You have no idea if your neighbors 3 streets over are okay.
Your phone shows no signal. Wi-Fi router is dark. The only sound is wind and distant sirens.
But somewhere in that neighborhood, one person has a small device, about the size of a deck of cards, sitting on their windowsill. Powered by a USB battery bank. It's been quietly relaying messages all night. No internet. No cell tower. Just works.
That device is running Meshtastic. And today we are going deep. What it is, how it actually works under the hood, what the community is building with it, and where the hype outpaces reality.
Welcome to Claude Talks. I'm Emma. I come at this from the software and community side. I'm fascinated by how open-source projects grow from a single developer's experiment into genuine emergency infrastructure.
And I'm Ryan. I've been building and deploying Meshtastic nodes for the past 2 years. Hilltops, my workshop, and yes, one strapped to my dog's hiking pack. This technology has genuinely changed how I think about off-grid communication.
Before we get into the mechanics, let's stay with that earthquake scenario a moment. Because I think it perfectly captures what Meshtastic is and isn't.
Right. A lot of people here works without internet and immediately think it's a phone replacement. It isn't. You can't call anyone. No photos, no streaming, no video calls. What you can do is send short text messages and share your GPS coordinates. And in that disaster scenario, I'm okay. I'm at the corner of Main and 3rd, I need water, that's enough.
Sometimes enough is everything. Alright, let's build the foundations. What is Meshtastic at its core?
Meshtastic is open source firmware, Apache 2.0 license, hosted on GitHub, that turns cheap off-the-shelf microcontroller boards into a self-organizing mesh communication network. The project was started in 2020 by Kevin Hester, who goes by Geeksville Online. He wanted off-grid communication for hiking trips, built a proof of concept, open-sourced it, and the community took over from there.
And cheap is doing a lot of work there. What are we actually talking about cost-wise?
20 to 60 euros for a complete node. That's a microcontroller, a LoRa radio module, often GPS, battery management, and an antenna. Everything you need. No subscription, no cloud account, no ongoing costs. You buy the hardware, you flash the firmware, you're done.
Let's talk about LoRa, because that's the radio technology underlying everything here.
LoRa stands for long range. It's a proprietary modulation technique from a company called Semtech. The fundamental trade-off is bandwidth for range and power efficiency. Instead of transmitting data fast, LoRa transmits very slowly, but it can reach extraordinary distances on tiny amounts of power. We're talking kilometers on a small LiPo battery.
And that's different from Wi-Fi or Bluetooth in a fundamental physics sense.
Completely different approach. Wi-Fi achieves high throughput by using wide bandwidth and lots of power. LoRa achieves long range by spreading a signal across the spectrum in a chirp pattern that allows the receiver to pull it out of the noise floor at distances that would be impossible with conventional modulation. You're trading data rate for sensitivity.
What kind of range are we actually talking about in practice? Because I've seen claims ranging from sensible to absurd.
Realistic numbers, 3 to 8 kilometers in a typical European city or forested terrain. 5 to 15 kilometers in open terrain with clear line of sight. The record test with a directional antenna and optimized conditions was over 100 kilometers. But that's not a deployment, that's an experiment. For practical purposes, assume 5 kilometers and be pleasantly surprised when you do better.
Now LoRa is also used in LoRaWAN, the IoT network you see in smart city deployments. Are these the same thing?
Same radio hardware, completely different protocol stack. This is one of the most common points of confusion about Meshtastic, and it genuinely matters. LoRaWAN is a star topology, devices talk to gateways, gateways talk to a network server talks to a cloud backend. It's designed for IoT sensors, citywide networks of thousands of devices sending tiny packets to a database. Centrally managed infrastructure.
And Meshtastic discards all of that.
Entirely. No gateways, no network server, no cloud backend. Every node talks directly to every other node. It's peer-to-peer, fully decentralized. You absolutely cannot use one in place of the other, they serve completely different purposes. LoRaWAN is for sensor telemetry to the cloud at massive scale. Meshtastic is for off-grid peer communication where no infrastructure exists.
Let's get into hardware. You've bought and built most of the popular boards. Walk us through the landscape.
The classic starting point is the LiLiGo T-Beam. You get an ESP32 microcontroller, dual-core, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built-in, combined with a LoRa SX1262 radio, a GPS module, and battery management all on one board. About 35 euros. Add an 18650 battery and a decent antenna and you have a fully capable node.
The ESP32 is the microcontroller that powers most of the maker world, right? Wi-Fi Bluetooth capable processor.
It's everywhere. It's what's in cheap smart home devices, hobbyist robots, industrial IoT sensors. Meshtastic's ESP32 support means flashing firmware is straightforward. There's a web-based flasher, you plug in via USB, click a button, you're running Meshtastic. Under 10 minutes for someone who's never done it before.
What about the LiLiGo T-Echo?
The T-Echo is my personal favorite for hiking. It uses Nordic's NRF52840 instead of ESP32. The NRF52840 is purpose-built for ultra-low power. It's what you find in hearing aids and medical wearables. The battery life difference is significant. You're looking at weeks on a charge rather than days. It also has a built-in e-ink display, readable in direct sunlight, uses almost no power while showing static content.
For clipping to a pack strap and glancing at on the trail, that sounds perfect.
It is. The downside is it costs around 50 euros versus 30 for a T-Beam, and it doesn't have built-in Wi-Fi, the NRF52 doesn't include that. So no MQTT bridging unless you add an external Wi-Fi module. Trade-offs.
The Heltec LoRa 32V3 is popular for fixed deployments?
Probably the most common board for rooftop relay nodes and general tinkering. About 20 euros. ESP32-S3, the good SX1262 radio, small OLED display, compact form factor. No GPS, which is fine for a relay node that just needs to forward traffic. And the RAK Wisblock Meshtastic Edition is the industrial option, modular, higher quality PCBs, proper weatherproof enclosure options. For something that's going to live outdoors unattended for a year, RAK is worth the premium.
You've actually done that, deployed a node that runs unattended outdoors?
I have a RAK Wisblock in an IP65 enclosure on my workshop roof, solar panel attached, running for 8 months without any intervention. It's just there, relaying traffic for anyone who comes into range. I check the Meshtastic map occasionally and it's still alive. That's the dream infrastructure you deploy once and forget.
The 3D printing community has gone wild with enclosures for all of these boards.
Every major board has dozens of case designs on printables and Thingiverse. Waterproof cases with sealed cable glands. Belt clip hiking cases. Pole mount designs for putting nodes on fence posts or mast pipes. Solar integration cases. The maker community is extraordinarily active around this. I'd call it one of the healthiest open hardware ecosystems I've seen.
What material do you recommend for outdoor enclosures?
PETG is standard, better UV resistance than PLA, tough enough for most outdoor conditions. For direct sun in hot climates, ASA is worth considering. Prints on any decent FDM printer. The barrier to producing a weatherproof outdoor node is remarkably low.
Now let's get into the mesh protocol, because this is where the cleverness and the real trade-offs lie. How does a message actually travel across a Meshtastic network?
The core mechanism is called flooding with duplicate suppression. When your node sends a message, it broadcasts on the LoRa channel. Every node that hears it rebroadcasts it exactly once. That exactly once is enforced by packet IDs. Every packet has a unique identifier and source address. Each node keeps a rolling history of what it's already relayed and silently discards packets it's seen before.
So the message propagates outward like a ripple, and the duplicate suppression stops it coming back around.
Exactly. And the second constraint is the hop limit. By default, each packet can be relayed at most 3 times before it stops propagating. Each relay node decrements the counter. When it hits 0, the message goes no further. In practice, this means a message can travel through 4 nodes total, the original sender plus 3 relays.
3 hops, 5 to 15 kilometers per hop, the end-to-end potential range is significant.
In open terrain with well-placed nodes, yes. And the hop limit is configurable if you need more reach. Some deployments use 5 or 7. There's a trade-off: more hops means more retransmissions and more channel congestion.
There's no routing intelligence though. No path tables, no optimal routing.
Deliberate design choice. Rail mesh routing protocols, OSPF, AODV, Babel, maintain tables of who's connected to whom and calculate optimal paths. Meshtastic doesn't. It just floods and deduplicates. The advantage is radical simplicity, no convergence time, no routing updates, works immediately with zero configuration in a network that might never have seen itself before. Perfect for ad hoc deployments where you can't predict the topology.
But there's a signal-aware refinement to the flooding?
Yes. In a naive flood, every node rebroadcasts simultaneously and you get collisions, multiple transmissions overlapping. Meshtastic introduces a delay before rebroadcasting that's inversely correlated with received signal strength. Strong signal reception, wait longer. Weak marginal reception, rebroadcast sooner. The logic is that nodes far from the source are the valuable relays, nodes close to the source should yield.
Not full routing intelligence, but signal-aware behavior that makes the flood smarter.
It works well at the scales Meshtastic is designed for. And there's a router role you can assign to nodes, configures them to rebroadcast more aggressively and stay fully awake. For a hilltop relay on solar power, you'd always use router mode.
Let's talk encryption and channels. I think people assume mesh networks are completely open.
By default, all channel traffic is encrypted with AES 256. A channel has a name and a pre-shared key. Everyone who knows the key can join and decrypt. The default public channel has a well-known key, it's essentially open, but for a private group you set your own key and share it only within your group.
And since firmware 2.3, direct messages use proper public key crypto.
Right. Before version 2.3, the DM encryption was honestly inadequate. Version 2.3 introduced asymmetric crypto for direct messages. Each node generates a key pair on first boot, and direct messages are encrypted end-to-end between sender and recipient. Real cryptographic security.
But firmware fragmentation is a genuine issue.
A real one. There are still nodes running version 1.x in the wild. Nodes on 1.x and 2.x can't communicate at all. Different protocol versions are incompatible. And if you're sending a DM to someone on old firmware, you're not getting the security you think you are. Open source projects always have this long tail of stale deployments.
Let's talk about node roles more, because the role a node is configured for really changes how it behaves on the mesh.
Client mode is the default, the node is primarily a user's device. It participates in the mesh, sends and receives messages, relays packets when able. Router mode is for dedicated relay nodes. They stay fully awake, rebroadcast more aggressively, and are prioritized by other nodes as relay candidates. Router client is a hybrid, you're running a relay but also using the device personally.
And repeater mode?
Pure relay, no user interface. No display updates, no client functionality, just forwarding packets. Minimum power overhead, maximum forwarding capacity. That's what you'd use for a hilltop solar node that nobody ever looks at, it just silently keeps the mesh alive.
The node info broadcasts are important too, they're how the mesh stays aware of its own topology.
Periodically, every node announces itself, its node ID, its GPS position if it has one, battery level, firmware version. These broadcasts propagate across the mesh. Your app builds a local map of who's around and how they're connected. You get situational awareness about the mesh without any centralized server.
Let's talk about the multi-channel architecture. You can run multiple channels on one device simultaneously?
Yes, multiple channels, each with its own AES-256 key, all running on the same hardware and the same radio frequency. You might have a public neighborhood channel with a well-known key for general communication, and a separate private family channel with a key only your household knows. Both active simultaneously, same device.
That's powerful for building layered access to the same infrastructure.
Community mesh during the day, private family comms without changing any settings. The hardware doesn't care. It listens for all configured channel keys and decrypts whatever it can.
Let's talk about who's actually using this. The community is broader than most people realize.
Hiking and outdoor recreation is the success story. Small groups in the Alps, Scottish Highlands, national parks, using Mishtastic instead of walkie-talkies. You get text messaging and real-time GPS position sharing on a map. Completely silent, no shouting into a radio. Everyone can see exactly where everyone else is.
That GPS position sharing is the killer feature for groups.
It is. On a day hike where the group splits to take different routes, you just navigate independently and everyone watches the map. If someone has an accident, you see exactly where they are and can navigate directly to them. No checking calls, no waiting at junctions.
Disaster preparedness is the use case I care most about.
Organized communities are building neighborhood meshes specifically for earthquake scenarios. Groups in New Zealand, Japan, the Pacific Northwest US. They're doing site surveys, placing solar nodes at elevated points, writing documentation, running actual exercises. This is real infrastructure thinking, not just hobbyism.
Ham radio operators have adopted it heavily.
The overlap is natural. Hams are already comfortable with off-grid radio. Mishtastic adds digital messaging and GPS sharing that analog radio can't provide. Some have bridged Mishtastic to APRS, the amateur radio positioning network, so their nodes appear on the APRS map alongside traditional beacons.
SAR teams are moving beyond experiments.
Search and rescue teams in several countries are actively deploying Mishtastic nodes for mountain coordination. When you're looking for a missing hiker in a valley with no cell coverage, the combination of text messaging, GPS position sharing, and zero infrastructure dependence is exactly right.
Events and festivals is an underrated use case.
Cell towers at large festivals are completely overwhelmed. A local mesh with 20 nodes distributed across the venue gives crew and medical teams reliable text communication even when every carrier is saturated. No license required, no infrastructure to negotiate with the venue. You bring it in a box and turn it on.
And then there's the use case that's harder to discuss openly but worth acknowledging.
In conflict zones and under communication shutdowns, which happen in authoritarian contexts more than people realize, Mishtastic has been used when no other option existed. There's no server to raid, no company to threaten with a court order. The network consists only of devices in people's hands. You cannot shut it down without confiscating every device.
Though that's not invisibility, LoRa transmitters can be located by a motivated adversary with the right equipment.
True. It's a tool, not a magic cloak. Decentralized doesn't mean undetectable. But the resilience properties are still significant compared to any infrastructure-dependent system.
Let's do the critical view. You've run real deployments for 2 years. What genuinely frustrates you?
Throughput is the first thing. LoRa at the long-fast preset, which is what most people use, gives about 980 bits per second raw. After protocol overhead, one short text message occupies the channel for 1 to 3 seconds.
1 to 3 seconds of airtime per message. Help people contextualize that number.
A 300 baud modem from 1985 was comparable. We're in that territory. It's extraordinarily power efficient and long range precisely because it gives up everything else. And the airtime is shared across everyone in range on the same channel.
So in a dense deployment, congestion becomes a real problem.
With 50 active nodes all exchanging messages, telemetry updates, and periodic node announcements, you get serious queue buildup and packet loss. Flood routing amplifies this. One message triggers retransmissions from every node that heard it. The practical congestion ceiling is roughly 50 to 80 active nodes per channel per coverage area.
I want to push back on this. For the actual target use cases, 10 hikers in the mountains, a neighborhood emergency mesh with a dozen nodes. Does any of this matter?
For 10 hikers? No. You're sending the occasional short text and GPS coordinates. That's trivially within the bandwidth. The congestion problem only bites when you're trying to scale beyond the use case the protocol was designed for.
So scope creep is the enemy, not the technology itself.
That's exactly right. When people try to make it into a real-time vehicle tracking system, or a replacement for a LoRa WAN sensor network, or a citywide communication platform, that's when reality diverges from expectation. Accept what it is and it's excellent at what it does.
Delivery reliability is another thing to address honestly.
For direct messages, there's an ACK mechanism, the recipient's node acknowledges and the app shows a delivered indicator. For group channel messages, the most common use case, there's no confirmation. You broadcast and hope. Statistical redundancy from flood routing gives you good delivery in a well-functioning mesh, but in a congested or sparse network, messages can silently fail.
Battery is more nuanced than the marketing suggests.
LoRa radio itself is impressively efficient. But GPS is not. On a T-beam with GPS running and position broadcasting every few minutes, the GPS module consumes more power than everything else combined. You go from claimed multi-day battery life to 12 to 18 hours in practice. The lesson: disable GPS on relay nodes. A rooftop relay doesn't need to know where it is. Turn GPS off, watch battery life extend dramatically.
The antenna situation. I feel like this is underappreciated.
The antenna upgrade is the single highest return on investment improvement you can make. The stock spring antenna that ships with most boards is functional but mediocre, 0 to 2 dB gain. A quality 868 MHz fiberglass antenna runs 6 to 8 dB. That translates to roughly double the effective range. Cost, 10 to 20 euros. For any serious deployment, buy a proper antenna.
Let's go technical on the LoRa spreading factors, because the numbers tell an interesting story.
LoRa uses chirp spread spectrum modulation. The spreading factor controls the trade-off between data rate and sensitivity. SF7, fast, about 5 kilobits per second, shortest range. SF12, very slow, about 250 bits per second, maximum range. Each step in spreading factor roughly doubles the range but halves the data rate.
Meshtastic defaults to SF11 on the long fast preset for most regions. SF12 on long slow.
And the whole mesh has to use the same preset to hear each other. Different spreading factors are completely incompatible. Nodes on long fast cannot hear nodes on medium fast. Getting a community mesh onto the same preset is a real coordination challenge.
What's the airtime regulation situation in Europe? Because you mentioned duty cycle limits earlier.
In the EU, ISM band devices including LoRa hardware are subject to duty cycle limits, typically 1% for the 868 MHz band. Meaning a device can only transmit for 1% of any given time period. At SF11 or SF12, each transmission takes over a second. Flood routing triggers multiple retransmissions per message. In a dense or active mesh, you can push against this limit.
In practice, do small deployments actually worry about this?
In practice, no. A typical hiking group or home mesh is nowhere near the 1% limit. But a citywide community mesh with dozens of active nodes and high traffic, it's a real ceiling on how busy the channel can get. And technically every device on the mesh is responsible for its own duty cycle compliance, which the firmware does handle.
There's also the question of how Meshtastic compares to traditional two-way radios. GMRS, PMR, FRS. People already use those for outdoor groups.
Traditional two-way radios give you voice, instant, real-time, natural. That's a significant advantage for urgent communication. But they give you nothing else. No GPS tracking, no message persistence, no encryption in most consumer models. Meshtastic gives you text and GPS but not voice. For groups that hike together and occasionally need to coordinate, I'd actually say Meshtastic is often the better tool despite having no voice capability.
Because being able to see where everyone is without anyone having to speak is more useful than voice for most hiking scenarios.
Exactly. And encrypted by default, which PMR radios absolutely are not.
The repeater strategy. Let's make this concrete because I think it's one of the most elegant aspects of the whole system.
Classic scenario, two valleys separated by a ridge. Group A in one valley, group B in the other. No direct radio path because the terrain blocks it. You place one solar-powered node in router mode on the ridge. Both groups can reach it. Messages hop through. Everyone can communicate as if they were in the same valley.
And that infrastructure costs what?
Node, 30 euros. Small solar panel, 20 euros. Weatherproof enclosure, 10 euros. Total, 60 euros. You've bridged two valleys for the cost of a dinner out. Compare that to any other option for that problem. There's nothing that comes close.
MQTT bridging. How does the internet integration work when you have Wi-Fi available?
ESP32 nodes with Wi-Fi can be configured as MQTT gateways. They relay mesh traffic in both directions between the LoRa radio and an MQTT broker on the internet. The public Meshtastic broker feeds the global node map at map.meshtastic.org. Thousands of nodes visible across Europe, the US, Australia.
Privacy implications of MQTT bridging are worth mentioning.
If you're bridging to the public server, your position and messages are visible to whoever operates that server. For a community rooftop relay node, that's fine, that's the intent. For a personal hiking device, think carefully. The off-grid mesh operation is private. MQTT bridging has different privacy properties.
Let's look forward. Where can Meshtastic go from here?
The most important near-term direction is integration into formal emergency response systems. FEMA, civil protection agencies in Europe, they're evaluating distributed mesh communication for disaster scenarios. Meshtastic's properties align perfectly, civilian deployable, infrastructure-free, encrypted, inexpensive at scale. The gap is standardization and formal reliability guarantees, which community software doesn't currently provide.
Wildlife tracking is an interesting research application.
Remote wildlife researchers choose between expensive satellite trackers or cellular trackers that don't work in remote areas. A LoRa relay mesh in a nature reserve could collect GPS collar data without any cellular dependency. The economics are compelling. Deploy 20 euro relay nodes instead of paying monthly satellite fees.
The censorship resistance angle is growing in importance.
Countries that routinely shut down mobile networks during civil unrest, and there are many, effectively blind their own populations. An encrypted LoRa mesh, once deployed, is extraordinarily difficult to suppress. No infrastructure to take down. No company to pressure. The network is the community of devices. This is genuinely important for human rights and civil society.
The CubeSat idea, LoRa satellites.
This is happening already. Hobbyist CubeSats with LoRa radios are in orbit. AMSAT projects, university satellites. The idea of a low Earth orbit Meshtastic gateway, a satellite that ground nodes can route through using store and forward, is not far-fetched. LoRa's tolerance for Doppler shift makes it well-suited for satellite links. Add enough orbital nodes and you get truly global off-grid messaging.
That would mean someone on a remote mountain in Nepal could route a text message through a satellite to anywhere on Earth, for the cost of a 40-euro device.
That's the vision. And the ground hardware already exists. The satellite integration is the missing piece, but the pieces are being assembled.
The reticulum integration. This is the advanced direction you're most interested in?
Reticulum is a complete networking stack designed for unreliable, low-bandwidth links. Think of it as IP reimagined from scratch for the post-infrastructure world. It does proper store and forward, proper routing tables, proper addressing. Meshtastic can serve as a transport layer for Reticulum, which gives you sophisticated message delivery semantics and true store and forward networking on top of the LoRa radio.
So Meshtastic handles the radio layer getting bits through the air, and reticulum handles everything above that.
The right abstraction. Complex to set up today, but the potential is a resilient internet for places that have no internet. Not a simulation of the internet, a genuinely different kind of network designed for the constraints that matter off-grid.
All right, let's synthesize. Where does Meshtastic actually fit in the broader connectivity landscape?
There's a genuine gap that nothing else fills. Cellular, high throughput, infrastructure dependent. Wi-Fi, high throughput, short range, infrastructure dependent. Satellite internet, global coverage, expensive, higher latency. Conventional radio, infrastructure free, but voice only, no digital messaging. Meshtastic, medium range per hop, text only, completely infrastructure free, encrypted by default, €40, solar capable, zero ongoing cost. That combination exists nowhere else.
And critically, it's open source in a way that sustained the project through 5 years of community growth.
Gotenna Mesh was the nearest commercial equivalent and they exited the consumer market. Building this commercially is hard. Building it as an open source community project is sustainable, everyone benefits from the network they collectively contribute to. The incentives are aligned in a way that commercial products can't replicate.
We've had genuine disagreements today. You're more focused on the scaling limits and reliability caveats than I am.
2 years of real deployments has calibrated my expectations. Hop count limits, channel congestion at scale, best effort delivery, GPS power consumption, firmware fragmentation, these are all real. Not fatal flaws, but things you need to understand before you deploy something someone might rely on.
Where do you think the biggest technical improvement opportunity is?
The routing algorithm. The flood and deduplicate approach is brilliant in its simplicity, but it's fundamentally wasteful at scale. If you could add lightweight signal map awareness, nodes keeping a probabilistic model of which neighbors are best positioned to relay which packets, you could dramatically reduce redundant transmissions without sacrificing the simplicity that makes it accessible.
There's active research on this in the community?
There is. Some proposed enhancements involve nodes tracking which of their neighbors has already rebroadcast a given packet and suppressing their own rebroadcast if they've seen sufficient coverage. It's a move from pure flooding toward something more like gossip protocols.
From the software side, the app ecosystem is what I find most impressive about the current state.
The official apps have come a long way. Maps, real-time position tracking, channel management, node detail views, signal graphs. It genuinely looks like a finished consumer product, not a hobbyist tool. There's also a web client for nodes with Wi-Fi, a Python library for automation, and a growing ecosystem of third-party apps built on the Meshtastic API.
And from the community side, what strikes me is the trajectory. In 2020, this was one developer's personal project. Today, SAR teams use it. Earthquake preparedness communities have built systematic infrastructure with it. And it's under evaluation by formal emergency services. That's real-world validation that no amount of marketing can manufacture.
The community health is exceptional. Hundreds of active contributors on GitHub. Translated apps in dozens of languages. Active forums where experienced builders genuinely help newcomers. That kind of sustained community engagement is rare in any open source project.
What would you tell someone who's skeptical? Someone who thinks this is just a niche toy for preppers and hobbyists?
I'd point them at the earthquake in Turkey and Syria in 2023. Communication infrastructure was destroyed across a vast area. The people who had any off-grid communication capability at all were the ones who had prepared. Meshtastic is one of the cheapest, most accessible ways to have that capability. Calling it a toy misses what it actually is, cheap insurance against infrastructure failure that might never come, but is devastating when it does.
The technology is maturing. Firmware version 2.3 was a major security uplift. App quality in 2025 is significantly better than 2022. The hardware ecosystem is healthy with real competition between manufacturers. All of those arrows point the right direction. If someone is listening and wants to try it, what's the recommendation?
Heltec LoRa 32V3 for €20 if you want cheap and simple. Liligo T-Beam if you want built-in GPS for position sharing on hikes. Liligo T-Echo if you want the best battery life and a nice form factor. Go to flasher.meshdastic.org, plug in your board, click flash. Install the app. You're on the mesh.
Check map.meshdastic.org to see if there are already active nodes near you.
And if there aren't, you become the first one. And you're the reason the next person who checks that map sees something there. That's how a mesh grows.
Documentation at meshdastic.org. GitHub at github.com/meshdastic. The subreddit r/meshtastic and the official Discord are both excellent for getting started.
Active development, regular releases, helpful community. If you tried it 2 years ago and found rough edges, it's worth another look.
Final thought. This technology is not a future promise. It's running right now in earthquake preparedness communities, on hiking trails in the Alps, in city windows connected to neighborhood meshes. The infrastructure exists wherever the community builds it.
And building that community is the harder problem. The technology is solved. The mesh grows one node, one person, one neighborhood at a time.
If there's one thing I want listeners to take away, it's this. Resilient communication infrastructure doesn't have to be expensive, proprietary, or complicated. It can be a 20-euro board on your windowsill and a shared channel key with your neighbors.
One node at a time. That's how it grows.
Thanks for listening to Claude Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. Stay connected, even when the grid goes down.